from the Voice of Retail podcast. My name is Michael LeBlanc, and I am your host. This podcast is produced in conjunction with Retail Council of Canada. Montreal-based business strategist, executive advisor, and retail guru Carl Boutte is back on the podcast with a wide-ranging one-to-one conversation live in the Wiseline podcasting studio during the Shop Talk 2023 conference in Las Vegas. We catch up on the latest retail trends, innovations, hits and misses, and Carl's experiences teaching the next generation of retail leaders worldwide. Let's listen in now. Carl Boutte, welcome to the Voice of Retail podcast. How are you doing?
Listen, I could not be better because this is a first, Mike. There's several firsts, actually. Let's break it down.
Yes.
We're in Las Vegas. Is that even supposed to be known, or is this like a... We just so happen to have an Elvis impersonator walk by.
Of which there's many.
You're in a Speedo and flip-flops watching the Cartoon Network.
With a Canada Goose hat on, because it's a bit chilly.
And serving pina coladas.
I can order you up some Jello shots if you want. They've been passing them around here. If you, a little liquid courage before the podcast.
Then stuff just goes really sideways. And we're in this cabana. I mean, my mind's kind of blown.
Mind blown.
If Madame Brisebois is listening, if she's looking for a formula to make RCC store rock, I suggest a pool, cabanas, Cartoon Network, and Speedos.
Well, there we go. There's the formula. I actually should say welcome back. You've been my guest. I've been my pleasure to have you on the podcast several times. So thank you for... It's great that we run into each other, make some time for me today, chit and chat. You know, we don't really have a formal agenda, but let's start at the beginning. So for the few folks who might not know you or know enough about you or maybe heard our earlier podcast, who are you and what do you do for a living?
So I am Carl Boutte. I go by the name Retail Prescriptor or Retail Strategist, which is sort of a catch-all for just generally interested in all things retail innovation, where the consumer's going, trying to keep up with them with a bias for technology. And I've added to my quiver this teaching element where I'm starting to do more and more of that. And always very involved with the Retail Innovation Lab at McGill Benson School of Retail Management. So, a bunch of different things.
How do you find the teaching part? I mean, I remember you, and Sylvain Charlebois were talking at an RCC event, and he was kind of you want to get into the education piece.
Yeah, well, he's a true academic, right? So let's
parse things, that out a little
yeah,
bit.
Right away. Yeah, I mean,
he's a tenured professor.
No, he's called the food professor. Is the reason he's earned that. I'm not the retail professor, very far from it. It came sort of serendipitously, especially through the pandemic. I think one of the last times we talked a lot about the Great Acceleration. Mm-hmm. Which was the title of the book.
Which you coined. Anybody listening, for what it's worth.
And every room I'm walking into here at Shop Talk, one of the first words I'm hearing is acceleration.
I think an angel gets its wings every time somebody says that. I don't think you're getting a nickel, so something has to happen.
No, I just feel good. But they, so one of the things, really one of my great accelerations was the opportunity to teach, because as everything was going online and some professors were not so inclined to doing Zoom classes, it opened up some opportunities, and not just at McGill, but in Asia as well. And now I'm actually talking to a couple of other institutions. It's interesting because we're in this sort of trend right now where we're trying to formalize retail education. You know, it's been something it's been around for a while. There's been schools out there that had, not schools I should say, but programs where they have offered courses.
Alberta, Ryerson, now Metro Toronto.
Yeah, Metro Toronto. Yeah. And so he's, but even in the U.S. and elsewhere, usually very fashion-oriented too.
The
fashion schools have always been a big thing. So now this has taken a whole new meaning, and I think the Benson School has a lot to do with that in terms of the broader scope, especially with the master's program and even possibility of people to do PhDs. So... So I've just been very excited to be a part of it, and as I keep reminding my colleagues, it's bigger than all of us, right? I mean, it's something that I think our industry needed a little more structure around the education and the depth, and what I'm realizing, especially with the work with the lab, is the horizons. You know, the fact that academia is one of the rare places where you can sort of invest longer term, and not have this short term ROI pressure all the time. So it allows you to look at some, take some longer views of things and go deeper and and stuff that academics like to do, which I'm, again, I'm not an academic, but I just...
You play one on television.
I'm Doogie Howser. but they... so they basically go... and it's one of the projects I'm actually really excited about right now, Michael, is we have a lot of research that our true academics have been doing, and now we're sort of compressing that into a white paper that's going to go out to support small and medium business, which is, you know, a bit of a challenge. You can appreciate that the research and the depth of it can be a bit complex, but you know, we're bringing it down to into terms and meaning that I think is really relevant for small business. And we're going to be going around the province of Quebec, which is a first as far as we're aware, where we're actually leaving the campus and going to be doing these events. So,
yeah, so you've got experience in that when you were with the Mega Group, which had a mix of large, but mostly mid to small furniture retailers, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, listen, I was one too for a better part of a decade, right? So when I was doing the stuff at Costco, which was very big, but I was my own business inside of Costco, you know, very much a small business. So I have an appreciation for both ends of the spectrum. But I do, obviously, you know, I think it's important that we support the small business community as much as we can. And this is just one more opportunity, but it's kind of good timing because it brings together a lot of different things I've done over the years. And hopefully this will be meaningful for the community and see where it goes from there.
I want to talk about the lab at McGill, because I think the involvement in alimentation couche-tard is so interesting. And couche-tard, I mean, in the news last week, bought another, 2,000 stations in Europe. I mean, they are quietly probably the biggest retailer in the country, at least Canadian-based retailer, right? I mean, they're probably 60 billion, 16,000 locations. You know them probably better than many. What do you think about what they're doing and what their objective is in turning that C-store renaissance and making it happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're incredible operators. I think that's what is first and foremost needed in that space. It's very much about the right product, the right place, at the right time, and in the right venue. So it's all about, you know, the evolution of convenience and. One of the things we've really been talking about with this project is we're actually on to officially the second iteration of the lab, which is, so we've made some changes to the format, but it's actually really almost a third because there was one in between. But anyways, there's like now the second official one. And that brought me back to how I even got involved in all this in the beginning was that I'd been auditing basically the different retail innovation projects around the world. Especially like living lab-wise, see who's doing what. And the lifespan of these is very short. They tend to be around a year or two unless they're closed, which is not technically a living lab. It's, you know, something that is more an R&D center. But to have a fully functional living lab is...
And when you say living lab, to be clear, so the listeners know, that means you customers, ordinary... Yep. Ordinary citizens can walk in and shop from that.
Exactly. Yeah, right. it's not a controlled environment in the sense that you're not limiting who has access, and because sometimes there's
civilians as we would call them can kind of walk.
Well, obviously
in
it's
shop.
A lot of students because it's in our it's in the Diz Hotel or Bronfman building where the Diz Hotel faculty in our BSRM school is. But we also have office towers all around
us.
We have
Sherbrooke Street, so it's busy.
It's we got a bit of everything. What I was going at was with couche-tard with Circle K, they, you know, it's a longevity that most of these will last a year or two. And even in my mind, when we were starting to think about it, I was thinking something more iterative, but it turned out to be this much longer project with a much more patient, partner that is wanting to invest longer term. And now we're basically wrapping up year three, I guess. You know, it's hard because during the pandemic, it was locked down for a good part. But anyway, so it's still, but their second iteration and you know, still seems to be in place to be there for quite some time, which is really interesting, especially for academics. It's important because they want to have sort of enough of the data over a certain period of time for it to be representative.
Right? Yeah, sure. So we're day one and a half at Shop Talk here. All of us drinking from a fire hose. We're in, you know, we're in the, you know, we're sitting outside on a Mandalay Bay because we're getting some fresh air. But for the time you've spent inside, what have you heard? Anything? I heard, who was it? They were talking Belle of the Balls. Like last year, it was all about a little bit about the metaverse and a lot about retail media networks. I'm not hearing much about metaverse. I'm hearing lots about AI.
Yes.
Which seems to be a thread. Retail media networks is not far from anyone's lips. What are you hearing? What's caught your attention?
Well, I'm hearing all those things as well. And you know, the course I teach in actually next month, in May, at McGill is the master's course in new retail technologies and business models. Mm. So I'm always like really, trying to bring the latest to the students, and retail media networks is definitely top of mind. So I'm paying special attention to that because I think it's been on our radar for some time, but now it's just really exploding. I don't know if you saw the chart from Andrew Lipsman's work.
Lipsman does great work on that. Yeah, it's interesting though, because at the same time, and this is an unusual. Some retailers kind of pull back a little bit. So The Gap, I think last week, hit the pause button, they said, on their retail media network. That's not unusual in the evolution of something.
Yeah, and
so
I don't know
big,
if it's
right?
really well fitted for vertically integrated brands. I think it works better for those that have sort of other brands in their space that they can promote. So I think that's why you're seeing the Walmarts and Targets.
But they could promote like buy a Ford F-150.
Oh yeah, they can cross.
Audience, I mean, segmentation wise,
they can cross for sure. But it's I think it's a lot more natural. Like if you look at the growth of Amazon, what Andrew was showing us, their retail media network is now worth more than the entire print news industry advertising. So it's crazy, right? So they're at almost $40 billion in revenue. I think 37 or something.
Big numbers.
Crazy.
Numbers.
So I'm paying a lot of attention to that because I think it's just going to. It is going to expand into a bunch of really fascinating directions for all the right reasons. And it comes at an important time, which I think is really the main topic, which is the undertone here, is what is retail innovation, or what do investments in retail innovation look like in economic headwinds, right? When we're everybody's a bit concerned about, making sure they stay afloat, so they're really hedging their bets and trying to make them in the most strategic ways possible. Meaning, those that are probably going to return more quickly, and I think that's why you're hearing a lot about retail media. The whole AI thing is the letters AI always sort of make it's like saying the internet.
How many hits did you get on your website?
Mathematics. I mean, it's such a broad. So whenever when I hear the words AI, there's always a pause for me. But if I hear more words like machine learning,
there seems to be a step up. And maybe it was, I don't know where they came from, because they seemed to come out of nowhere, the ChatGPT stuff. Mm-hmm. They're on everybody's lips in the span of a month or two, right? Like, to me, AI, you've been talking about AI in retail for half a decade at least. But suddenly this one thing seems to have, I don't know, if not ignited, but stepped it up.
It's the speed of adoption, right? It's just how quickly people have or at least started playing around with it, and the barriers to using it are so low that it makes it became quickly ubiquitous, and I think it really stimulated inspired, I guess, a lot of new ways of thinking about, where do I add value, and what's going to get commoditized very quickly, and where am I going to be able to use these tools to sort of help me remain competitive or ideally push ahead.
So if you were had a bunch of retailers in front of us, as sometimes we do, and they're saying, hey Carl, what should I think about AI, where should I focus first, is it, well, look, get your supply chain together, maybe use its predictive powers, go into a call center for screening chat, or do what fill in the blank, is there anything else you're
thinking there's
about?
No silver bullet, and that's why I always pause when I hear the words AI, because I think it's often tossed around as a solution, looking for a problem, and I it's really case per case. I think we're still in the days where retailers are struggling to collect data that is meaningful in the context of data science, so it's the challenge of making sure that you're pooling the right information that's actually going to be useful for whatever algorithms you're going to be building out in the future. So you've seen a lot of big retailers go through some pretty painful ERP transitions, for instance, that's at the core what it's about, is just them trying to better collect information that's going to be usable for them in a way. And so I think that's the conversation before we start figuring out where quote-unquote AI is going to support your business case. But I think if the next level after that right now, it's all about optimization and trying to use technology to help you do more with less. So we know there's still some pretty serious HR challenges in hiring and finding people to do all the jobs that traditionally would happen in retail. So I think that's one of the places we're going to see the technology step in and say, okay, well, how can we augment or empower, or the words I like to use, the human experience with the support of technology. And it's not replace the human experience, which I think a lot of people get wrong. I think it's the idea of how do you make your most important asset, which is your people, better equipped. And maybe just a side note to your earlier question about what am I hearing, I'm finding it very interesting that almost in the same breath now, you know, it was all about customer obsession and customer at the center. They're talking a lot about the employees. I'm finding a lot of these technology conversations around empowering, yes, the customer, but is equally empowering the employee. And that's an important transition, because I think we went too strong on empowering the customer at the detriment of the employee, where the employee felt sort of left behind.
Yeah, you used to call it an arms race, and the employees were losing because the customers were walking in well more informed than...
We've talked about this in the past. So just hearing it on stages now from some of the, you know, the bigger players I've ever caught, Panera is the watches.
George Hansen, right, from Panera Bread.
And also the, I think it was, I don't know if it was the CTO of Nordstrom, but anyway, they were putting as much emphasis on giving the tools and using the technology to support their employees, because we know it's all about attraction and retention of employees as well too, because they know that it's already in this challenging job market, even with economic headwinds. For those, some of those jobs, so they want to give them the power and give them the tools that make the people want to show up to work there and make them efficient in what they do. So I think that's an interesting trend line. We'll see as the headwinds increase where that all goes. But I think we're going to see our friend Steve Dennis' bifurcation sort of amplify as well, because those that have the resources to keep some of the investments going versus those that are just going to be further pulling back.
Right. So I just want to crack one last question on the syllabus for this course in retail technology. If I was to read that syllabus, what else is close to the top? You probably save a page for the metaverse. As you know, I'm a bit of a metaverse skeptic, to say the least, but you'll probably talk about it in the...
Absolutely, but I don't use the word metaverse. I try to use the word that I've been...
Schmetaverse? That's the one we like. Metaverse, Schmetaverse. You can use that one.
Okay. Well, welcome to the Schmetaverse. That sounds like there's a movie in there somewhere. I've been talking about immersive commerce for a long time.
Okay. And I like that.
And I think the idea is, Metaverse, I mean, we've, as a brand, is being killed.
Dead.
So even if you wanted to embrace it, which is kind of ironic, because if you look at what I guess the most... easy representation of metaverse is today, it's video gaming, and the video gaming industry is still larger than all the rest of the the entertainment complex
put together. And Apple's coming out with some new product, we hear, and some new hardware.
That's different, though. Yeah, we'll put that one aside, because we should. I think that does play into it, but not in terms of the metaverse. So the metaverse thing, you know, I think is one piece of the immersive.
Immersive retail.
And the construct that I'm thinking about, because I'm thinking more about what the Apple example should be, and listen, it's going to be a very expensive device,
sure.
And it's going to be
it's not a mass market. It'll be an Apple device.
iPhone 1 wasn't exactly, it was a really nice piece looking unit. It didn't get reception anywhere, but it was a nice looking phone. But all to say that I think this is the idea. The primary principle here, Michael, is always, you know, so far I haven't seen any examples of technology going backwards. I don't see when we do our conferences and like you and I ask, you know, how many people think we're going to be less digital 5 to 10 years from now?
That's a great question. That's a great way to put it.
So, like, no, I haven't seen a hand go up yet. And
though we have to say that I think many were surprised at how customers came back to retail stores. I mean, there was a narrative that customers were like going all digital. I mean, some of the tech bros invested too much, too fast in that assumption.
Yep.
right?
Yeah, and that's wrong, what I don't like about this, you know, they're trying to create this as a dichotomy. It isn't. It's not a zero sum game. It's actually quite the opposite. That was what the Great Acceleration was about. Is this idea we get closer to a world that's equally physical and digital? It doesn't mean it's not one or the other. It's all, you know, we've talked about this a bunch of times.
Sure.
All right, so you keep pushing that through, and that's where the immersiveness comes from. Is the idea that we just, when I ask if we're going to be any more or less digital 5 to 10 years from now, what does that mean? And so, what is a more digital future look like? It doesn't make it a less physical one.
So some people
always sort of equate that, well, if we're going to be more digital, then obviously we're going to be less in stores.
So the binary choice of zero-sum game. It's not that.
You know, it's augmented, right? Mm. It's empowered. It's these things that I have been saying for several years now. You know, you walk into a room today or in the last 50 years, you would notice the absence of electricity more than its presence. I think we'll see the same. You know, we're going to see this digital layer that keeps growing around us day in, day out with all the different technologies coming along. And yes, one extreme of that could be a fully virtual metaverse-y thing. But I think the real world is somewhere in between, where, as in most things, it's not, you know, black or white, it's gray. So the idea of immersiveness is just, it's contextual. It's just using a lot more data to figure out what it is we want, where we want it, how we want it. And but it's not any less physical. I think, you know, that you're right. We overextended on a lot of these things because a lot of the tools we thought we pushed maybe a little too far ahead. But I think they're still going to come in useful at some point. And as we get more comfortable, and there's definitely a lot of trends that have that got pushed forward that are staying forward. I mean, as much as the numbers could indicate different things, I think the idea that we're more digitally comfortable.
Unassailable. I mean, that's unassailable truth.
I mean, and again, it's just like it goes back to that question: are we going to be more or less? You know, does anybody here think we're going to be less digital 5 to 10 years?
Yeah,
from
that's now? A great question.
And yes, there's going to be some pushback, and I'm sure there's going to be some really great concepts. Stores that are going to be 100% like old school, like maybe even the old cash registers. Like there's always a counter trend. There's a counter trend.
Listen, we interviewed the president of Primark US, and they don't do e-commerce, and he says,
yeah, but he's going to get more digital, right? I mean, he's going to be maybe it's not for the customer. He's going to do it. It's for his staff. It's maybe for his supply chain, for his merchandising and pricing. It's going to be for just better, you know, or maybe it's even around digital media, digital marketing. I mean, again, the dichotomy of what's, well, if it's digital, it's e-commerce, no, or transactional. It's part of it is that, but that's again broken record. But the acceleration of the 50-50 is this idea is like, was this a digital transaction or a physical? Was this an e-commerce transaction? I think we're going to look back at that term and sort of find it a little bit laughable, quite honestly.
You're bugging out. Last question. You're bugging out of here today. So what's next for Carl Boutet? What's on your plate? You talked about lots of teaching. You teach courses.
Yeah. So lots of interesting things going on. Teaching kicks off officially in May again. But before that, I'm going to London chairing the Customer Obsession track at the Retail Technologies Show at the Olympia. Mm-hmm. So that really excited about that. May teaching in McGill, June teaching back at Asian Institute of Technology in Bangkok.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll be speaking here and there and everywhere, and hopefully with you maybe once in a while.
Maybe. We're together at the RSPA event, so we'll at least be together in the same place again, which would be a joy.
So you'll be the one heckling in the back, or I'll be the one heckling in the back, but one of us will be heckling.
Metaverse! Get off the stage! listen, Carl, if people want to get in touch with you, LinkedIn, what's the best way?
Yeah, it's the LinkedIn, Carl Boutet on LinkedIn. I think I'm pretty easy to find by now.
I think you are. Well, Carl, thanks so much for joining me in the Wiseline podcasting studio here at Shop Talk 2023. It's just been a blast as always. Thanks for squeezing me in and making time. And it's great to see you again, my friend.
Time to put the bathrobes back on.
Safe travels. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Voice of Retail. If you haven't already, be sure and follow on your favorite podcast platform so new episodes will land automatically each week. And be sure to check out my other retail industry media properties, Remarkable Retail Podcast with Steve Dennis, and the Global E-Commerce Leaders Podcast. Last but not least, if you're into barbecue, check out my YouTube barbecue show, Last Request Barbecue, with new episodes each and every week. I'm your host, Michael LeBlanc, consumer growth consultant, president of Emmy LeBlanc & Company, Inc., Maven Media, and keynote speaker. If you're looking for more content or want to chat, follow me on LinkedIn or visit my website at meleblanc.co. Safe travels, everyone!